How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and today, running head-to-head with another show streaming live on the internet, ROH's Hostage Crisis Internet Pay-Per-View. Airing as we speak at ROHWrestling.com. You can head up there, check out that iPay-per-view headlined by Davey Richards versus Kevin Steen. And you can listen to our show in the background as you watch it. We're going to talk to you about that show, plus all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We have a ton of it. Two UFC shows in 2 days for the first time ever. Friday night, Guida versus Maynard, a horrendous main event. Followed by Saturday night, UFC in Brazil with Rich Franklin and Vanderlei Silva in the main event. A match where nearly everybody in the world was predicting that Rich Franklin was going to knock out Vanderlei Silva. In fact, while he won the fight, not only did Rich Franklin not knock out Vanderlei Silva, but Vanderlei Silva nearly knocked out Rich Franklin in the second round. We're going to tell you about that fight, plus all of the other big matches over the last couple of days. Also talk about last weekend's WWE pay-per-view. It was No Way Out. John Cena versus John Laurinaitis, essentially. It was actually the big show, but John Laurinaitis had his career on the line, with a John getting fired. And in fact, a John did get fired. We'll talk about that, plus the future of Mr. Laurinaitis. All of that on today's show. We'll talk all of the television from the past week. Raw, SmackDown, Impact. Impact, of course, with a live angle at the end of the show that, quite frankly, didn't get over at all. We'll tell you all about that, plus tons of news from around the world. A new IWGP champion, a new Mystico, a new entrant into the Money in the Bank ladder match, and why this person was announced, what John Cena is going to be up to over the course of the next month, the return of Randy Orton, and so much more. All of that coming up today. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We got so much news to talk about today, and Mike, when we went off the air last week, we were preparing for the No Way Out pay-per-view with John Cena versus The Big Show in a steel cage match headlining, and the stipulation was that if John Cena lost, he was fired. Not like that's never happened before. And if The Big Show lost, John Cena was fired. And as it turns out, The Big Show ended up losing a race to the floor. John Cena won the match. John Laurinaitis was fired, which of course somehow allowed him to return on Raw for a farewell address where he was again beaten up. So now the claim is that John Laurinaitis is no longer a TV character, although he is still working house shows around the world. And Mike, what did you think of that show?
I prepared so well for it. I think we may have over-prepared in that I prepared so much that I psyched myself out of paying for it and figured, you know what? I'm going to wait till the next day. I'll wait till Raw to actually see what happened and played out here, because just the more I started thinking about it, the more I thought, I really don't need to pay for this. You know, the thing with AJ is something that I figured would be wrapped up nicely on Raw and SmackDown. And it was, as it continues on now, with her playing Daniel Bryan and Kane, and CM Punk as well. So I didn't feel the need to pay for that, and certainly not the main event either, because I figured, well, knowing WWE, they don't actually stick to any of these things. So they're going to blow right through this stipulation. I'm going to see Johnny Ace on Raw again, whether it's to be embarrassed or no matter what it is. And that's exactly what happened with Big Show and Otunga walking away from him on Monday night and Cena giving him the FU and him getting booted out again after Vince McMahon told him he was fired on Sunday. So there just was not anything on there that made me want to watch. And then hearing the reaction from it, there was no need to order the replay of it, too. So, you know, a big fail, I think, for WWE in this case. Obviously, they had guys come out at the end and Brodus Clay and guys like that. Anyone that the Big Show has put down in the last couple of weeks, save for R-Truth, who's out with a legitimate broken foot, I just, you know, it didn't seem like the sound all that exciting of an ending.
Sheamus versus Dolph Ziggler for the world title was fine. They actually missed a surprising amount of spots. Probably actually the worst of the four matches they've had in the last month. And the world title, or the WWE title match with Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, and Kane was pretty good. Actually, probably the best match on the show. But nothing that is worth your $54.95. And the rest of the show was pretty lame, actually. It's kind of like a three-hour SmackDown, which is all we need with all of these three-hour Raws coming up. And the main event was so slow. The Big Show and John Cena lumbering around in a cage. 18 million people ran in to interfere. And finally, they did the photo finish with John Cena winning. And John Laurinaitis was fired by Vince McMahon, who, by the way, after being knocked out, think about this, everybody. The Big Show knocked out R-Truth, who has not been seen since because he has a broken foot, but that's beside the point. He got punched out by Big Show. He's not been seen since. Alberto Del Rio supposedly suffered a concussion when his head was sent into the steel steps on SmackDown a couple of weeks back, and this concussion allegedly caused him to be pulled from the pay-per-view on Sunday. Meanwhile, the Monday prior to this pay-per-view, so 6 days earlier, Vince McMahon was punched by the Big Show and in storyline suffered a concussion. And the concussion was so serious that 6 days later, here he was, Vince McMahon, totally fine, on the pay-per-view, not selling the concussion at all. So, there you go, everybody. That's Vince McMahon, the chairman, the man with the steel head. So, it was a pay-per-view. As noted, no reason to go out of your way to see it. It led to Raw Monday Night, which was the end of John Laurinaitis as a character. And, I don't know. Raw was fine. I was not appalled by it or anything like that. It wasn't the best Raw of all time. It was an acceptable show. But as noted earlier on in the program, although John Laurinaitis has now basically been fired twice, he is still working all of the house shows. The shows are being headlined by John Cena versus The Big Show, John Laurinaitis, and David Otunga in handicap matches 3-on-1. And the storyline is that the board of directors has demanded that John Laurinaitis fulfill his contractual obligations to these matches, despite the fact that he has been fired. Mike, explain this to me. How is this possible?
I have no idea. You know, back in the day when they would do this, there would always be some logic behind it. If you went to a house show that aired after TV where a guy ended up being off, they would have him tied into a manager somehow or something like that to keep him around. When it comes to WWE nowadays, just doesn't matter. They just drop it. I mean, ladies, you were talking about Ironhead Vince there. I mean, you know, hey, look, Triple H didn't sell the arm at the Pacquiao fight either, or the Mayweather fight. So, you know, why should Vince do it as well? So, now, it doesn't make really any sense whatsoever, but they never go out of their way to really try to fix any logic gaps or anything like that. And that's been one of their big problems is, obviously, wrestling fans, especially longtime ones, the ones that would listen to this show, are going to be able to call out those holes in the storyline and be annoyed by them. They're always usually going to catch those things because they watch intently. But the problem is when you have the average fan and the casual fan who you pander to on a, you know, ridiculous level, and you have those logic gaps and they see through them, which has been the case with WWE, especially in the last 6 months to a year, where they just don't get interested at all because it's just, you know, too obvious even for them. You know, they can't get invested, and you don't lock those people in, and that's their biggest problem.
Now, despite the fact that he's working some house shows, and there has been some advertising put out for John Laurinaitis' appearances down the road, do you think that, based on the way that they shot everything on Raw, that, in fact, they have decided to write out the John Laurinaitis character from television? It seemed to be the end of the character, and you know, we've seen guys fired before. John Cena's been fired. He hasn't even missed a show. And other people have supposedly been fired and been back within a week or two. But this seemed like the dude's gone. Do you expect them to bring him back, or is he finished for the time being?
Well, the problem is we're back into another GM storyline and mystery GM storyline in that Mick Foley did the honors this week. Next week it's going to be Vicky Guerrero. Where are they going to go with this GM, you know, until the board decides on who the GM is going to be for both shows or for either show? They're going to go through every GM from the past and giving them a chance again. And I guess it depends on where they go with that story, because how do you know that after 6 to 8 weeks go by or something like that, they just don't go, well, we're going to bring back John. You know, I don't have enough faith in their stories and how they've done them in the most recent times to actually say that, no, he won't be back, because everybody else has. There hasn't been a stipulation they've stuck to, or they've, you know, figured out a way to ignore and keep going.
They are doing the gimmick where every week there's going to be a new GM from the past coming back to host Raw, and the pickings are slim. Obviously, they're not going to bring back Eric Bischoff, for example.
Bob Barker?
Well, I guess he would be. He was more a guest host. Like actual guest GMs, the number is significantly smaller. If we're talking real GMs, you got William Regal, I guess, could still do it. But Vicky Guerrero will be this week. Teddy Long was last week. Is Teddy Long? Who was last week?
Last week is Mick Foley.
Oh, that's right, Mick Foley. My God. So yeah, probably be Mick Foley and then Vicky Guerrero and then Teddy Long. And anyway, the idea, I would guess, is that the new permanent GM is going to be revealed on the debut episode of the 3-Hour Raw, the 1,000th episode. And they would love to have Ric Flair, but based on the status of the WWE TNA lawsuit, I don't think that's going to happen unless it gets settled and things are ruled favorably for WWE. So maybe if they can't get Flair, they'll bring back Laurinaitis. Maybe they're confident they'll get him or somebody else, and that's why they wrote him off. I'm not sure. But we can talk more about this after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. I would like to welcome three new affiliates this week in Utica, New York, WUSP-FM 95.5, WUSP-AM 1550, and WADR-AM 1480, all welcoming the show to their affiliates. Want to thank you very much for that. If you are listening to this and you're not on an over-the-air affiliate, but you are a programming director and you'd like to carry Wrestling Observer Live, drop me an email, Brian@WrestlingObserver.com. That's B-R-Y-A-N at WrestlingObserver.com. And I will get you in touch with the people in charge of getting you Wrestling Observer Live. We've been talking the WWE Raw show from this past Monday night, guest GMs, who may be a guest GM in the future, and Ric Flair. And as noted, the WWE TNA lawsuit is ongoing right now, and a lot of it hinges on, in fact, the majority of it hinges on Ric Flair. And as long as that lawsuit is going on, it is extremely doubtful that WWE is going to hire Ric Flair. So unless they think this is going to be settled in the next couple of days, most likely Flair is not going to be the special permanent GM come July 23rd. Or I believe it's July 23rd is the date for, yes, July 23rd, the 1,000th episode of Raw when the show moves to 3 hours. And I actually think if they could get a hold of him, and I'm sure at some point down the road, Ric Flair will return to WWE, obviously. But I think a guest GM role is pretty much the best possible role for Ric Flair at this point of his life.
Oh, God, absolutely. The problem is going to be convincing him of that, and convincing him, even if he comes in that way, that he's got to remain that way, because You know, 10 years ago, okay. Now, I just don't want to see Ric Flair wrestle anymore. And he's going to want to be the heel. And I guess he could be a heel GM down the road, although, I mean, people do not want to boo Ric Flair, and I don't think they will boo Ric Flair, even if they try to position him that way. So, yeah, Flair would be the best-case scenario if they have a problem with that. I mean, there's a couple different ways they could go. I'm sure Shawn Michaels was a guest GM at some point. Most certainly Steve Austin was. So they do have some options for that 1000th episode if it can't be Flair.
What are your thoughts on SmackDown this week?
SmackDown was okay. It was, you know, more of a wrestling-heavy show, and, you know, I wonder if it was better than the pay-per-view in some ways. Big Show cut a good promo at the beginning, you know, removing himself from the John Cena deal and focusing, throwing his attention at Money in the Bank and wanting to win the world title and obviously saying it's for him and not for anybody else. That had brought out Brodus Clay with the women, and there was no time to dance. They were upset. They were angry. And Big Show stared him down. They got in, and Brodus was going to get the little bit of the better of the deal when David Otunga ran in and clipped his knee, laying him out. We had a Ryback squash over two guys, one of which Booker T said is the cousin of Brickhouse Brown, which I guess there was sort of a resemblance. He was trying to rub his abs like Brickhouse, but it wasn't quite the same. And then we had Alberto Del Rio and Christian. Was actually a pretty good match, which was, you know, Del Rio won it with an armbar after Ricardo Rodriguez distracted Christian, and Cody Rhodes ran in afterwards to work on Christian's arm as well. Had Kane and Daniel Bryan, where Kane won with a choke slam after AJ rang the bell. She was sitting at ringside throughout the entire match, and they were kind of hinting at her banging the bell when it came to Daniel Bryan getting the advantage, and finally he did, and Kane ended, he rang the bell, thought he won, and Kane ended up getting the win. Had a Zack Ryder-Heath Slater match, which Ryder won, and the primetime players beat the Usos, and then they brawled with the Colognes backstage. And then Sheamus and Dolph Ziggler had a rematch, and again, obviously the match on the pay-per-view didn't sound like it was 4 stars or anything like that. This was okay. But it does make sense, too. I know there's a lot of people, and I guess the reaction of Dolph Ziggler on last Sunday, a lot of people said if you're going to do something with him, there would have been a good time to do it in the Northeast and give him a title run. But it's just as well with how little titles mean and the fact that you don't have to take it off Sheamus just yet. It doesn't hurt my feelings that he held onto the belt.
Now, the idea behind the Big Show Money in the Bank deal is that as of today, and this could change, John Cena is not on the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And I guess that would mean this would be the first pay-per-view in 2012 where a champion actually closes out the pay-per-view and not a John Cena match or something else. Now, that could change, as is always the case, but right now he's not on the show, and so the idea is to build up the Money in the Bank matches really big. Largely, they just don't know what to do with John Cena at the moment, and there's also the possibility they're going to give him a little bit of time off to deal with some personal issues, which of course would be his divorce proceedings. And it was quite a week for the divorce proceedings, as John Cena's soon-to-be ex-wife has accused him of infidelity, Mike.
Perish the thought. Someone in the professional wrestling business not being monogamous to their spouse. I'm a little surprised by this, especially a man who is on the road, if I'm not mistaken, and this is no exaggeration, 748 days a year. I cannot believe that something like this could have possibly gone down.
You know, they've only been married a few years. They've been, I mean, the claim is they're high school sweethearts. And so I guess they've been together for a long time, but they've only been married for a few years. But I remember John Cena going on Howard Stern, for example, and talking about exploits on the road with other women. I know that I've heard about this because I remember, not like, you know, too in-depth details, but he talked about, you know, heavier women and this and that and dares he'd had with people. And he was quite frank about this. And I don't know. Maybe they worked together at the time, but I don't know what's going on. All I know is that I know John Cena has spoken of dalliances on the road before, but that was before they actually officially were married. And Ken Doan this week, in fact, had a lot to say about Mr. Cena. Mentioned that John Cena years back, when Orton first got suspended, had tried to get Orton fired. And I do know from talking to people in WWE who were there at the time that, in fact, John Cena hated Randy Orton. I don't know what their relationship is today, but certainly at the time, he was not a fan of Randy Orton. And Ken Doan also claimed that John Cena broke up his engagement with Mickie James. And there are a lot of people in wrestling right now that are outraged at Mr. Doan for going public with a lot of these stories and allegations. And Mike, Twitter is a very special thing.
Yeah, it is. And, a lot of what, you know, people in the wrestling industry, it's the simple fact that, you know, guys have, this is not a surprise, especially not when guys were legitimately on the road in the olden days. You know, it's not good to be married in wrestling. And, you know, it's a lot of them also have issues with Ken Doan because of his reported attitude is and his self-view and arrogance and things like that, that they don't like him either. But with that said, and really, John Cena's divorce should be relatively a private matter. I mean, obviously, there's always the TMZ aspect and things like that, and people find it interesting. But realistically, I don't, unless it affects what he's actually doing as a performance or something like that. And even if it did, I could actually understand that. It's a very human thing to be going through a divorce, and no matter, you know, even if he filed it or whatever, it's not like this is an easy thing. With that said, where it starts becoming more of a wrestling news issue is what Ken Doan said about John Laurinaitis, who reportedly Ken Doan says that in his exit out where Laurinaitis said there was nothing for you, even though he blames John Cena and this whole thing with Mickie James for basically taking away his career. He was told by Laurinaitis if he kept pushing it, that would, you know, in no uncertain terms, if he kept pushing the issue and asking about it and asking what could happen to Cena because of the whole thing, and this is why he was being released, that it would affect his chances of coming back. He also mentions later on that, you know, he would go to the arena, like a lot of guys do have been released from the company, look for work and look to talk to somebody. And he was always told that, hey, you know, we'll give you a call, we'll see what's up, and then they never did. And then finally, Cena blowing him off when he wanted to confront him about the issue, I guess one last time is what sent him over the edge in saying these things where, you know, the timing of it was very interesting, too, because it was on Wednesday where John Cena was on Good Morning America and being celebrated for doing the 300th Make-A-Wish. So it's, you know, yes, is it sour grapes from Ken Doan? Yes, it is. Is it a legitimate issue if, you know, somebody had an affair? And again, this happens with women in the WWE all the time. They do take it out on guys. So it just lends more credence to that. And it's not, again, it's a publicly traded company. So when you look at it that way, you know, if he could make enough noise and somebody could latch onto it, it could be a legitimate beef. It just, I don't think it's going to get to go to that point.
I don't know if I was surprised or not that that Cena's wife's side brought up allegations of his infidelity. I don't know. I had heard some things, obviously, and I wasn't sure what was going to happen. There was part of me that just thought it's just going to kind of quietly go away and there will be a lot of money involved. And then there's that other part of me that thought this, you know, obviously there's a lot of stuff that she could say. And she has started with the infidelity, and I don't know where this is going to lead. I don't know if that was just the first, you know, the first volley, where it's something that, you know, I don't know how surprised anybody listening to this would be to hear that a wrestler had dalliances on the road, I guess is the best way to say it. But what else does she know? Was this kind of the first shot fired with more to come? We'll talk about it after the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday afternoon. 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest news and information, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on pro wrestling and MMA, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We have daily news updates. We update the website anytime there is breaking news. And daily radio shows. And when I say daily, I don't necessarily mean one show per day. If you love this show and you only get to hear it once per week on Sirius Satellite Radio, XM, or your local affiliate, you are missing out. Daily radio shows, and in fact, at some points, as many as 5 shows in one day. That's right. This past Thursday, I did 5 radio shows in a single day. We were joined by Todd Martin to talk the news. We were joined by Dr. Lucha Steve Sims. We were joined by the Ring of Honor television champion Roderick Strong. We were joined by the Dragon Gate USA champion. The champion of the world, Johnny Gargano, was on the show. And we had a Brian and Vinny show. And then I woke up the next morning and we did a show with Terry Funk. There are tens of thousands of hours of audio in the archives right now. If you head to WrestlingObserver.com and sign up, it's only $10.99 per month. You get access to all of this. You will have radio shows to listen to all the time, probably literally for the rest of your life. So if you've got a long commute, if you love to listen to audio in the car, at the gym, when you're out jogging, well, we got the audio archive for you. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. As noted, if you like this show, you will love a subscription. If you head up to the website, scroll down the right-hand side of the page at WrestlingObserver.com. There's a listing of our latest 3 free radio shows. You can download them. There are no fees. There are no pop-ups. There's nothing. It's just an MP3 file. Download it. Put it on your audio device, listen to it, and if you like what you hear, well, sign up, and you'll never run out. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, we were talking about the John Cena situation with his soon-to-be ex-wife, and my thought as I was getting into before the break was that John Cena, the revelation this weekend that he was perhaps not faithful to his wife on the road, this is a revelation that would not surprise a lot of wrestling fans, not in particular about John Cena, but any wrestler in general. And as I noted earlier, John Cena has been public in the past on Howard Stern about messing around on the road. And granted, these interviews were before he got married, but still he talked about going around and doing what he did. Now, I wonder if perhaps it was a situation where his wife's side was going to keep quiet about a lot of things. And they made an offer, and John Cena's side said, no, we're not going to give you that. And so his wife threw out the infidelity card because it's something that has been talked about before publicly. Wouldn't necessarily be a surprise to a lot of people, but it was a shot fired as if to say, listen, now we're playing ball. This is what we want. And perhaps the idea is that now they'll get what they want, but if they don't, perhaps she'll throw out a card that would not be something that would be considered public knowledge to wrestling fans who listen to Howard Stern or various other media. So maybe that is the game here. She threw out an easy one first as kind of a, let's wake up here. And if, in fact, he does not play ball, then she's got other cards that she might play that could be very embarrassing to John Cena.
It's possible, and the only thing that we had heard before this that had come out, at least publicly, was the thing on TMZ about Cena doing this in the first place and making her an offer and filing for divorce. So maybe they had been working back and forth actually for quite some time and trying to figure some things out, because all we know is she turned down Cena's offer. Cena files, it comes, you know, quote-unquote, as a complete surprise to her. And then, you know, we're at where we are now. That is possible, yeah, that she could have something else, you know, laying there waiting to come out or something like that. And it doesn't have to be something that wrestling fans would know about. It would just have to be something against his character, because that's the thing that would hurt him the most, being a womanizer or whatever it would be. you know, not so much. But if it's anything that would damage his reputation as far as being able to be a charitable celebrity and just a celebrity in general, if it's something like that, then, yeah, she could have something like that waiting. But, you know, we just don't know either. And, again, this may have been going on for quite some time for all we know, too.
Impact this past Thursday night. Let's discuss this program. They are still going live every single Thursday night until mid-August. The show is going to be going live as an experiment on Spike TV, try to boost the ratings. Show went head-to-head with the NBA this week, which was, well, they got slaughtered. Actually, they'd been slaughtered worse in the past few weeks, but still a 0.95 rating. Actually, you know what? Let me rephrase that. They got slaughtered because the actual viewership numbers for this show were the lowest in this time slot, and actually the lowest viewership numbers they'd had in quite some time. The rating was still basically a 1.0, but I'm not going to get into a full explanation of ratings and shares and everything like that. But suffice to say, despite the fact that the rating was a 1, the actual viewership numbers were much, much lower for Impact. So, not a great number. And, of course, the expense of going live is excessive, significantly more than taping 4 shows in a row and putting them on television. So the numbers have got to go up in order for Spike TV to continue airing the show live. Now, the big angle at the end of the show this week was the reveal in the AJ Styles-Dixie Carter situation. And for those of you that have not been following Impact, what happened was Christopher Daniels and Kazarian kept providing information to the Impact audience regarding, in fact, infidelities between AJ Styles and Dixie Carter. They had photographs of them supposedly in an intimate embrace. They had video of them going into a hotel room, and AJ and Dixie were playing it up they obviously weren't saying they were having an affair, but you were supposed to, as a viewer, believe that, in fact, they were very concerned about this because they were having an affair. So, the big reveal this week was, I actually am not entirely sure. There's a lady who apparently was on drugs, who may or not be pregnant, I'm not sure. She appeared pregnant, but they never mentioned it. And AJ and Dixie are helping her? I don't know if they're helping her to stay clean or they're providing her with drugs. I'm not entirely sure. I actually have no idea really what was going on with this. And when the show was over, I thought, well, we'll see where this goes. But as it turns out, that may have been the blow off to the entire angle. The actress they got to play the drug addict was horrible. And they knew it. And so now, I guess there's probably very little desire to move on with this because they'd have to continue to use her. So, all in all, a pretty much disastrous reveal. What were your thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, well, they should be happy that not a whole lot of people had a chance to see this. Maybe they knew they were going to get slaughtered, and they knew they had no way out of this incredibly bad. Again, the storyline itself has been entertaining because the guys involved in it have been entertaining, and you know, we just had Styles and Angle win the tag titles, and you know, I guess they could have been, you know, using that as a way out, and this could actually be the end of the whole thing, which, to be honest, it ended terribly. It was a horrendous segment. It was just bad. It was poorly acted. It doesn't make any sense. It's not something that, you know, the wrestling fans and the Impact crowd bid on. They didn't want that. And me as a viewer, I didn't want that either. And hopefully, to be honest, it is the end of it, because unless they take this in a bizarre different way, there's no reason to continue it on. That was pretty much, you know, killing it ice cold right there. Because again, and there were lots of logic gaps in this anyway, as you went along. I mean, even if you were relatively entertained by what the storyline was and the wrestling involved in it and the characters involved in it, didn't mean there weren't big holes in it. And here's another one, too, where, you know, Dixie's putting her marriage on the line. She couldn't have said, look, I can't tell you too much, but a friend of AJ's or whatever this was is strung out and we need to help her, and that's what it is, Serge. No, you have Serge throw a punch at AJ that he takes a bump for. And again, it's just stuff like that where you think about it now and you were willing to gloss over that a little bit because the thing was pretty damn entertaining. And again, because of the guys involved and the matches involved, but with that said, the way it ended, it just makes those other things in the past of this storyline just stick out even more. It was just a really a horrible way to end it.
So there you go. That was a big reveal, and we may never hear from this woman again. Maybe they'll have, you know what she reminded me of actually was like, whenever Hulk Hogan has to come out and explain something, he's always confused. He tries to explain such and such a tournament or such and such. I remember when he was trying to explain gut check and open fight night. It was like, he got done explaining it and I was even more confused. And I don't know if like something was lost in translation with this actress, but man, she just went out there and I was just racking my brain trying to figure out, what are you getting at? What is going on here? What is the problem? I understand something about you and drugs, but how do AJ and Dixie play this? Are they helping you? What, how are they helping you? By getting you drugs? By getting you off drugs? What does Chris Daniels and Kazarian have to do with this? How do they know? Why is this such a big secret? It's baffling to me. So, anyway, on another subject on Impact, there was almost no follow-up to Sting getting attacked by three men. Hulk Hogan just came out and said that he wasn't even going to show the footage. He was not even going to acknowledge these men, but he was going to make sure that nothing like that happened again or something. I presume that Hogan, I don't know, another explanation that... but anyway, the point is we're probably not going to see a follow-up on that anytime soon, although we may. The angle, I believe, was largely done to take Sting off television for a while so that you didn't have to explain why he was not involved in the Bound for Glory tournament. So who the men will be, I don't know. I presume at some point they'll come back and be unmasked. But for right now, the storyline, I believe, is on hold.
Speaking of bad acting and Hulk Hogan and having no explanation for anything, see, they're re-releasing No Holds Barred.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's I like how it's WWE Studios, you know, officially re-releasing No Holds Barred. I didn't really see that coming, and they didn't make light of it by of course, you know, overusing the word brother and putting emphasis on it in the long commercial they showed for the DVD release of it. But are you excited about that?
You know what's funny is when I was a young lad, I'm 37 now, when I was a wee lad, I was a huge fan of the movie Bloodsport, and I had a friend over the other day who's also in his mid-30s, and the subject of Bloodsport came up, and somebody else in the room with us who was around that age group had never seen the movie, and we were, like, absolutely baffled. Like, this guy is, he does martial arts, and he'd never seen Bloodsport, and he was in our age bracket, and it was like, what the hell's wrong with you? How have you never seen Bloodsport? But the fact of the matter is, those of us in my age group that had seen Bloodsport, we loved that movie. You know, the movie is, like, pretty horrible watching it back, but at the time, we loved that movie. And that's a movie where, like, if they re-released it on Blu-ray today, I can imagine me and my friends that loved that film going out and getting the Blu-ray and going home and watching it and just having a great old time. No Holds Barred is not like that. No Holds Barred is not a movie that when I watched as a child, I was like, oh my God, I need to go back to the theater 25 times and see this film. No, that was a movie that nobody who saw it needed to ever see again, yet it's being re-released like it's some sort of wacky cult classic. And I don't know how it's going to do, but I would expect not well. Let me get your thoughts on this when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live, everybody, on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, we were discussing No Holds Barred, Hulk Hogan versus Zeus, theatrical release from, I believe, 1988. And, Mike, you asked me my thoughts. What are yours on the re-release of this film?
Now, if I'm not mistaken, I know I didn't see it in the theater. I think I saw it when they debuted it. I think they did it with Tuesday in Texas. They did it with some short pay-per-view, if I'm not mistaken. And I can't remember. It was or around the time. Yeah, that's right. That's right. They did do it because it was around the time of that Survivor Series with Zeus and Randy Savage against Hulk Hogan. If they gave me that, I guess, on the bonus DVD or something like that. I guess if you loaded it up with promos and WWE TV from that time, I'd go ahead and bite on it probably just for the nostalgia value of that. But if it came to just the movie itself, I think there's enough clips on YouTube where Hulk picks the guy up and he starts sniffing around and he makes that Hulk face and he's got that weird kind of, you know, voice that he has from the movie and he says, "I smell duty." And the guy says it's because he did and crapped his pants and Hulk just throws him down and looks away disgusted. I think I can watch enough of that on YouTube without spending any money on the DVD for just that movie.
I don't know whose idea it was to release this movie, to
re-release it. Are there old guys in it, though? I guess it's Stan Hansen in it. I think some guys make appearances.
I think so, but I could also go watch The Wrestler with Vern Gagne and see a whole bunch of people make significantly better cameos.
Heavy Ric Flair?
That's actually a good movie. For those of you who have never seen The Wrestler with Vern Gagne, it's actually a real good movie. What's so funny?
No, nothing. I always love the guy from Mary Tyler Moore. What is his name? When he does the breakdown of all the wrestlers who have passed away, like Iron Mike DiBiase and stuff like that. I always, for some reason, even though it's true, it just comes across as so overdramatic where if I wasn't a wrestling fan who saw that movie, I would just, I don't know, maybe guffaw.
We're back in just a moment after our hourly break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. So much news to talk about in hour two. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and welcoming our three newest over-the-air radio affiliates in Utica, New York, WUSP FM 95.5, WUSP AM 1550, and WADR AM 1480. Thanks so much for joining us starting this week. In hour one, we had a lot of stuff to talk about, including UFC on FX and UFC Brazil. Touched on them. We'll talk about them more here in the second hour and all of the wrestling TV for the week, including Impact with the big reveal of the secret that AJ and Dixie Carter were harboring. And as noted, at this point, I'm still not entirely sure what the secret was. We're going to talk more about those shows here in hour two. Mike, I want to ask you very quickly before the next break here, what do you think about Taylor Hendricks? Should she get a contract with TNA after participating in the gut check this week?
You know, it wouldn't hurt my feelings at all, actually, because she is, you know, she's still very early in her career, but she's been trying to gain some confidence in Ohio Valley, and I think as long as she's still in Ohio Valley but working in TNA, at least in some form, I don't think it would be all that bad of a thing. It makes more sense than hiring Alex Silva from TNA like they did when Ric Flair flipped the script on them, but not as much sense as Joey Ryan would have made. So I do hope she actually gets a shot. She could tell she was a little bit above her head. So as long as she's still in OVW and getting regular work there, along with being on TNA, I don't think it's really all that bad of a move to do.
All right, everybody, we'll be back in just a moment, and we'll kick off more UFC discussion. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for another hour. Pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mr. Sempervivi, let's talk some UFC. There were two shows in the last 2 days. There was Friday night Maynard Guida, and there was Saturday night UFC Brazil with Silva versus Franklin. And that Maynard versus Guida fight, boy, did that suck!
That Thankfully, I only caught the last two rounds of that. I had issues. I forgot to actually set the DVR, so I had to record the replay, and unfortunately, I did not set it accordingly because the show did run a little bit long. I missed the chance of taping it, so I only saw ended up seeing the last two rounds of that fight, which, you know, I saw Maynard getting angry, and, you know, obviously, to me, he won those last two rounds outright. Apparently, all the controversy, though, came down to the first three rounds, where a lot of people thought Guido won those rounds, even though he incorporated a style where he was backing away and trying to tire Maynard out, but didn't do anything as the fight went on to force him into truly tiring him out and winning the fight. So sounds like a situation where it's, you know, yeah, Guida probably should have won the fight if you gave him the first three rounds, but he didn't truly win the fight, and Maynard ended up coming out with the victory, which I guess was the proper decision from how it sounded.
This was a total old-school double turn, is what it was, as everybody loved Clay Guida when he came out. And then he began to fight, and I think it was about halfway through round two when people realized that his strategy was to not get hit. And in order to accomplish this strategy, he did a lot of running and backpedaling. And granted, it was not to the level of Caleb Starnes, although people were comparing it to the Caleb Starnes fight, which, if I recall correctly, is the only fight that I can ever recall that was scored 30-24 across the board. And this actually was a five-round fight, so it wasn't going to get that low. But people turned on Clay Guida, and they got behind Gray Maynard when he flipped off Clay Guida and lost his mind and then just stood there with his hands down and begged Guida to punch him, which Guida did. And then Guida shot for a takedown, and Maynard sprawled and almost got him with a guillotine, which was like the most exciting moment of the fight. But then it was a lot of running from that point forward, and Maynard was outraged afterwards. He was outraged. He was frothing at the mouth. He was screaming. And then at the press conference later in the evening, Clay Guida was talking about the fight, and he mentioned that, you know, Gray's a tough guy. He hits real hard. We just tried to make a strategy to not get hit by him, and apparently it didn't work out so well, and Gray Maynard actually felt bad for all of the mean things that he had said and the anger he'd exhibited towards Gray Maynard, or towards Clay Guida, and the two men are apparently friends now. So all's well that ends well, except that I had to watch that main event, and it was absolutely infuriating. And it's just...
Well, he was already a heel going in, and the fact that he kept the braids, which there was controversy, or at least a small bit of it, at least, with Guida's side saying that the athletic commission contacted them and said Maynard's side wanted his hair tied down, which, you know, if you think about it, is a good psychological advantage, or at least something to say to try to rile up Guida. But he, you know, accepted it and said, well, I was going to braid him anyway, which, why would you do that? The one signature thing that he has, the one thing everybody loves him for, why did he have his hair down in braids anyway? I think this whole thing may have been just one big conspiracy to turn Clay Guida a heel.
Clay Guida, yeah, the story was apparently that Clay Guida's camp was alerted that the athletic commission was had received a complaint about his long hair. And so Gray Maynard was questioned about this, and he said, I didn't know anything about this. And the commission said, well, yeah, your camp filed this complaint. So Maynard actually was pleading his innocence here. But Guida's side was like, oh, fine, we'll tie it back. That's no big deal. And there was actually the discussions going into the fight that perhaps this will backfire on the Gray Maynard camp. And perhaps with his hair tied back, it will not get into Clay Guida's face, and he will be a better fighter as a result. And suffice to say, that was not the case. He just moved around a lot. He just moved around a lot and didn't do much. He threw some shots. I didn't even really know how to score this fight. It was just like, yeah, he landed some shots in the first couple of rounds, but I think I may even give the second round to Gray Maynard. But regardless, it's not like anything really happened except in that fourth round there. And there are a couple times where each guy landed good shots and that sort of thing, but I really don't want to spend too much time. I don't want to waste too much time talking about this fight because it was absolutely It's just infuriating to me. But Dana White was infuriated as well and cut a promo about how much the match sucked and basically said that, I don't know if this is a one-time thing or if this is how Clay Guida is planning on fighting for the rest of his career, but if this is his new idea for future fights, I advise against it, he said. So hopefully Clay Guida is listening and engages next time. Now, that brings us to UFC in Brazil. And believe it or not, the first UFC event that I have not watched dating back to probably 1996. Unfortunately, well, maybe not. I don't actually know the quality of the show. But I had family commitments that made it impossible for me to see this show. And I got texts throughout the evening from people. And apparently it was an interesting show, to say the least. I don't think anybody really called it like a great show or anything like that, but an interesting show. And Dana White was unhappy because I guess he enjoyed himself at the show, at least based on the tweets that I got from Dana White throughout the evening. But he was in a very bad mood after the show. And apparently that was a result of going on Twitter and finding that many of his Twitter followers did not like the show.
Oh,
and
God. What
were your thoughts, Mike, on UFC Brazil? Were you siding with the Twitter followers, or did you enjoy it?
I think maybe Dana needed to get some sleep, considering he was in Atlantic City. Then did he go to Brazil? He was not there for the press conference, I don't believe, but he was obviously, you know, frothing at the mouth afterwards. It was... You know, realistically, if you think about it, if you would take, let's say you take Fisher Stout off the FX card and you put it as the main event of this one and you take Silva Franklin off, this is a show that could be on Fuel. It really could. I mean, that's where they, if you don't have TV Globo, that's where they showed the Ultimate Fighter Brazil show. And it's nothing against the guys on the show, except for it was not a show that, I think Aldo and Faber did 150. That's about where this one's going to be, if not less. And I don't think, you know, it's not a cause for alarm or anything like that. But, you know, it was not a show with a whole lot of appeal to buy except for the main event fight. Now, good things did come out of it to me. I mean, Wolverine Viana, that was in the second fight of this on the show, which I think, yeah, that was on the preliminaries on FX. I thought he put on a really good performance and he stood out. And I think the Honey Jason, who won the featherweight tournament on the pay-per-view, I think both of those guys came out of this with a lot more cachet, and I think you have something with both of those guys that you can continue on with. You know, and again, the card up and down was good. The preliminaries on FX, I don't think there was a whole lot of excitement, I think, for the average fan when it came to guys, especially because there were guys they did not know. So I don't know how that's going to do or anything like that, but I think up and down, it was a good fight show. I think if you have like a Friday night fight style show where Dana White talks about running, you know, 52 shows a year next year, I think you have shows like this that would be great for Fuel, and I think made a lot of sense. You can't put too much on the main event or anything like that because you need to save those guys. But up and down, I don't really think there's a whole lot to complain about other than they have a lot of shows and this one's going to get lost in the mix.
All right, we're running up against the break here, so when we come back, we're going to have you take us through the Vanderlei Silva-Rich Franklin main event, which a lot of people thought was an excellent fight, and it certainly went a lot differently than... Uh-oh, hold on. A cat is attempting to get on the mixer here. So
by God.
It's a perfect time to go to a break. So let me take us to break. I'll take care of my cat. We'll be right back. Listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are not joined by my cat. I normally don't let the cat in this room here, but of late, the cat's been cooperating. She'll just come in, and she has a little spot that she curls up in, and she just quietly sleeps there. And I thought, well, let's give this a shot. Let's let the cat in during the show, and hopefully she'll just go to her little spot right there and curl up and go to sleep. But no! Instead, she had to dig for 10 straight minutes through all of the mail on the floor I don't know if you guys could hear that, but she was making quite the racket. And then at the end of that last break, as noted, she attempted to climb all over the mixer here. So I had to eject her from the studio, and we are now back. We are here,
wait,
of course.
Making racket like that and busting up things and getting in the way, if the cat gets to be big enough as it continues to grow, will you name it Ernie Ladd?
Well, this cat ain't going to get that big. I think this cat's full grown. But if it got much bigger, I don't know what I'm going to do. I prefer my cat small. Not these. I go to people's houses and I see these giant cats. And it's like, that cat could barely move. What a poor quality of life for that beast. But I like to keep them trim and fit. And then they play all day long, including here in the studio. Anyway, everybody, it's Wrestling Observer Live, believe it or not. And we are here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, we were talking UFC in Brazil, and we are going to continue on with that discussion. Mike is going to take us through the main event of the show. It's Vanderlei Silva and Rich Franklin. I have not seen this fight, but due to my radio schedule last week, I was unable to make official predictions for the website. But my prediction would have been Rich Franklin over Vanderlei Silva via knockout, probably in the first or second round. And in fact, Rich Franklin did win, but not only did he not knock out Vanderlei Silva, but Vanderlei Silva apparently nearly knocked him out. And Vanderlei Silva's performance was such that Dana White is, I guess, open to having him fight again in the future. And Mike, what are your thoughts on this?
Always a scary prospect. You look at Rich Franklin, who's 37, then you look at Vanderlei Silva, who's 35, and you just think of all of the fights. And granted, Vanderlei Silva fed off of being incredibly blown up and facing incredibly undersized Japanese talent, but he also stood in there with guys like Mark Hunt, guys like Mirko Krokop, lots of guys, and he has taken lots and lots of punishment in his career. And, you know, things have been winding down for him for a while. He's kind of turned from the axe murderer into the friendly axe murderer, the UFC liaison, and not a liaison, but at least a face that everybody knows and everybody kind of loves and adores now as a legend of the game. But he has taken a lot of punishment, and he took a lot of punishment realistically in this fight, too. And it's not that Franklin was going to destroy him at any point or anything like that, but it's just, Silva had one good round. It's not that it was a bad fight, but Silva really only had one good round. It was the second round where, you know, he landed a really good right hand that dropped Franklin, and Franklin said after the fight he didn't remember anything from the second round on. He only remembers the fifth round. That's when he started coming back too, and his trainer had told him that there's only one round to go. But he pounded Franklin, and he barely recovered, and he barely survived the round. The time ran out with Silva pounding on him, but, you know, it is possible that Silva, you know, could have won the fight there if it went on for just a little bit longer, but the fact of the matter is he didn't. And you wondered in the third round, was he okay? Was he taking it off a little bit and kind of recharging himself, or was he out of gas? And realistically, it seemed that he was out of gas because he just came in flurries throughout the next couple of rounds, especially in the last 15 seconds of the final round where Franklin had actually knocked him down. But it just, you know, Franklin used his reach from outside, and Silva just could not put it together for anything but the random flurry here and there. And again, it's not going to hurt my feelings to see Vanderlei fight again, but I'd like it, I hate to say, to have a stacked fight. But again, I wouldn't mind seeing him fight again, but it's got to be somebody who, frankly, I would like to see is light hitting, or is maybe, you know, a new kid in jiu-jitsu or something like that, who you want to test out his chin and see how he is on the rise or something like that. But the days of Vanderlei Silva facing somebody, I think, dangerous should be out of the window. And I was one of those ones who thought Franklin was going to knock him out too. And you know, again, he possibly could have. And you do have to take into account that Franklin was training to fight Kung Lee. And so he was able to negotiate a catch weight of 190 pounds, and I'm sure he was much more than that, and he's much, much physically bigger than Silva going into the fight, too. You know, it's amazing watching Vanderlei now that he ever was the size he was fighting at Pride at 205 pounds and being in the shape that he was. But, again, nothing against Vanderlei Silva, put on a good performance and a good effort, and I thought was a fun fight to end the show, but the days of him, you know, in heavy competition or are really out the window.
I heard there were like five low blows in a single show. Is that correct?
Oh, that was the common theme of the night. It happened on FX, and it happened, I swear, I think it was every single fight, and that includes the main event. I think the only fight of the pay-per-view where it didn't happen on was the one of the quicker fights. And again, if the fight ended in the first round, like the Helenio-Trinaldo fight did on FX, which Trinaldo, who I believe usually fights at 170 pounds, beat a guy in Delson Helenio, who weighed 185 but looked like he weighed about 205 pounds when he came in. But Trinaldo, I'm not sure what his trajectory is going to be, but he's a jungle fight, reportedly a lightweight champion, which I assume is their 170 pounds. And he's a three-time kickboxing champion. He was actually really impressive on this show, too. But, you know, again, I don't know. I lost my train of thought there, getting rambling on.
You know, I just remember I was getting all of these tweets throughout the night, and Dana was tweeting from the building. And he sends out one that just reads, I think it says something like, UFC Brazil, is all caps, by the way. UFC Brazil, nuts, balls.
Yeah.
That's the entire tweet. And I was like, what in the heck is he talking about? And then another friend texted me that was watching the show, and they explained that it was a night full of low blows. So,
yeah, Franklin Silva had one, I think, Ferreira Moraes, which was the middleweight final, which Ferreira won by unanimous decision. There was at least one there. There were two or three in the Castro Honey Jason fight. So, yeah, I mean, outside of Verdum and Russo, which didn't go that long. In fact, I think the opener of the pay-per-view had at least one or two as well. So, again, outside, if it ended quickly in the first round, like a couple of the fights did, there wasn't one. But everything else, yeah, there was.
Well, that sounds like an exciting event. I, as noted, didn't get a chance to see it, so I don't have any other comments on it. But
nobody else really did either. Again, this is something that is probably going to, again, hover around that WEC buy rate for Faber and Aldo, which, you know, for them was an impressive number. For this, you know, it really wasn't, because, again, this was, and it's not an insult to the show or anything, but this was truly a fuel card.
Let's talk a little bit about some international pro wrestling, including Hiroshi Tanahashi once again winning the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Take us through this story.
Yeah, he did it on June 16th at the Dominion pay-per-view. He knocked off Kazushi Okada, who most of the American listeners they'll probably not remember him from his short run as Samoa Joe's counterpart, is sort of out of the Green Lantern, Bruce Lee's character of Kato. They played him up as Okada or Kato on the TNA show before unceremoniously dropping him. Now, he had went to CMLL after that, and like a lot of New Japan guys do, and achieved some success there, and they looked like they were readying him to come in and actually be a good part of their future. Surprised everybody when he came in and knocked off Hiroshi Tanahashi, who spent most of 2010 having, you know, he had a bunch of IWG title matches against Nagata, against, you know, a litany of guys last year where you could have said that was the match of the year against several guys, and he was by far the wrestler of the year, so it kind of surprised some people when Okada came in and knocked him off right off the bat. He had a rematch against him that was also very good, and Okada's held up to his end of the deal, so, you know, again, but it was still a surprise that Tanahashi lost the title. Well, he picked it up for the sixth time on the 16th, beating Okada, and again, what was said to be a very good match. And he, again, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Fujinami was the only guy to hold the belt that many times, and it's a far different era now with, even in Japan, belts move. They don't move like they do here in the United States, but they're a little more liberal on giving guys titles now. But he still probably is the, you know, best heavyweight champion out of anybody going in any promotion throughout the world. And he's probably the front runner so far this year for the 2012 Wrestler of the Year.
Six times. Now, let's say that he wins at seven. Is the era of wrestling such that he'll be remembered as a great, but not an all-time great, because this is no longer the era of network television and guys, I guess, being recognized everywhere they go?
Well, you know, I can answer that by saying, how would you look at John Cena? Because in a way, even though it's a different situation and there's different things that are unique to Japan and unique to what WWE is doing now, it's kind of the same thing. He's the only guy. He is Japan's John Cena. He's the only guy who stands out head and shoulders above anybody else. And he's one of the few guys that even the old-timers say kind of fit in that mold and who they look at as a star. You know, again, I don't think the titles are going to matter as far as the count. It'll mean more in Japan than it does here in the States, and it'll be something that's brought up. But realistically, it's his star power and being the biggest star in Japan and in New Japan for the past several years. That's what he's really truly going to be remembered by. The title runs are, frankly, going to be secondary like they are all over the place.
But still, even though, I mean, I kind of understand your comparison, but at the same time, John Cena is the only guy that makes a difference in what is today. Actually, it is the biggest pro wrestling organization of all time. I mean, if you look at the amount of money that WWE is making today, and even though the ratings are down, I mean, you're still talking a good Raw is going to have 5 million people watching the show. I mean, John Cena is still the top guy in a promotion that's doing historic numbers even today. Actually, I'll get your thoughts after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and welcoming our three newest over-the-air affiliates, Utica, New York's WUSP FM 95.5. WUSP AM 1550 and WADR AM 1480. Thank you so much for supporting the program. And you, the listener, can support this program by heading to WrestlingObserver.com. We have daily news updates. We have weekly newsletters and newsletter archives, the Wrestling Observer and Figure Four Weekly, and daily radio shows. And by daily, I mean at least every day. This past Thursday, I did 5 shows in a single day. Biggest names in the history of wrestling appear at WrestlingObserver.com, including this past Friday, we were joined by Terry Funk for a 1-hour discussion on pro wrestling past, present, and future. Terry Funk is a visionary of where wrestling is heading, and we had a great interview with myself, Dave Meltzer, and Terry Funk on Friday. If you sign up today, $10.99 a month. You can sign up once and never again if you don't like it. But if you love this show, I guarantee you that you'll love a subscription to the website. We have tens of thousands of hours of audio. Every single show that we have ever recorded, dating back to 2005, is available in the archives right now. Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Bret Hart, the list goes on. The names that have appeared on Wrestling Observer Radio and Figure Four Daily. You can head into the archives, check them all out. If you've got a commute, if you love to listen to audio while you work out, whatever you do, we have your audio covered. Not only all of the new shows, but all of the archives. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. You can scroll down the right-hand side of the page, and there's a listing of our latest 3 free radio shows, MP3 format. Check them out, download them, and if you like what you hear, sign up, and you get 10,000 hours of audio or more in the archives at your convenience. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com as soon as this show's over, or right now, as soon as you can. Check it out, sign up, and you'll have a great time. Now, before the break, Mike and I were talking about John Cena and Hiroshi Tanahashi. Some comparisons. And, Mike, I was noting before the break that Tanahashi, there are a lot of comparisons to John Cena, but at the same time, John Cena is the head of the number one promotion in the world. And not only that, even today, when overall worldwide interest in wrestling is lower than perhaps it's ever been, WWE is still a company that is bringing in $500,000 in gross revenue every year. 5 million people are watching the flagship show every week. I'm not quite sure the comparison is apt.
Yeah, it's not. That's right. Because WWE is the monster that it is, but WWE would still be the monster without John Cena. It wouldn't be as good of one. It wouldn't be as lucrative as one. It wouldn't even be as interesting as one, which may amaze a lot of people out there who are disinterested in the product right now, some of them because of John Cena. But I'm not saying Hiroshi Tanahashi kind of saved New Japan, but frankly, he was able to pull them, you know, out of the doldrums and was one of the reasons, along with the booking and the fact that they went back to the basics and they created stars and they took things seriously and they just rebuilt trust in their fan base. And the person on top of that was Hiroshi Tanahashi, who, as any great somebody who goes down in history, has got the story about him coming up as a young lion, and he was actually stabbed by his girlfriend. Now, as this is going on, one of the guys in his class, Shinsuke Nakamura, is pushed right to the top, given the IWGP title, was something revolutionary in a lot of ways for the promotion, and pushed is going to be a hybrid star. And frankly, guys, if people who don't know this, Lyoto Machida was also going to be one of those guys for Antonio Inoki, who was going to be a hybrid professional wrestler and represent professional wrestling in MMA in Japan. Didn't quite work out for Nakamura, but as this was going on, Tanahashi was stabbed by his girlfriend. He was taken, he jumps on a scooter and takes himself to the hospital. He goes and checks himself in. And how does the promotion take to this as far as him actually getting stabbed and taking himself to the hospital on a scooter? They bury him because you showed some sort of shame in being stabbed by your girlfriend. And he wasn't bastardized at all. He was in a tag team with Yutaka Yoshi. He was also in that class of wrestlers coming up. They were tag champions. But the focus was not going to be on him. But he's got that overcoming story where he ended up being the guy and has been the guy that it's actually taken New Japan on his shoulders and ran to the top. His charisma is unmatched by anyone other than John Cena. His talent in the ring as far as getting people to believe, frankly, can be said is far more impressive than John Cena, because Cena plays to a younger fan base and there's a lot of people that don't like him, whereas Tanahashi has actually been able to pull from all fan bases, and it pulls off his role better in that he can play a sneaky heel. And again, even not understanding the language, you can tell by his work in the ring how much of a superstar he actually legitimately is. This isn't just hype for a guy in Japan who maybe many of you have never seen. If you do watch his matches, in 2011, there were a lot. Nakamura, Nagata, Goto, Okada. Again, all of these matches, or many of them, people consider matches of the year, or at least match of the year candidates. So really, when it comes to Tanahashi, yes, it's not an even playing surface, but as the results of the Wrestling Observer newsletter point out every year, there's obviously a reason that he's always ranked where he is, and once you watch him, you understand that. And the number of title runs isn't going to matter, but the number of days that he spent on top in this era, in this business, is impressive. It's not as impressive as what Shinya Hashimoto was doing or what Keiji Muto has done, and I think he's only second to Hashimoto right now as far as number of days holding the title, but that's where his legacy is going to come in the fact that there are going to be no stars from this era. I mean, there will be a few from Dragon Gate that people will remember fondly, but really the post-Misawa, post-things changing, you know, after MMA's explosion in Japan and a lot of the other things that happened that created this vicious, bad malaise, he's actually legitimately a guy that stands above all that, who will actually be remembered because of everything that he's done. So it's not a fair comparison to Cena, but it's about the closest one you can get.
Here we are nearing the end of the show, and we have not even discussed the retirement of Fedor Emelianenko, which every time I come to the end of a show and I start discussing this, I'm more baffled that perhaps the greatest heavyweight of all time has announced his retirement, and it's a... I don't want to say it's a non-story, but I don't know if it's maybe nobody's taking it seriously, or maybe Fedor's aura is such that people don't even consider it a big story. But Fedor Emelianenko on Thursday, U.S. time, faced Pedro Hizo in what he had claimed was going to be his final match, and the odds were strongly in his favor, minus 2,000 for Fedor, plus 1,000 for Pedro Hizo, who weighed in at 244, so not even the fattest Pedro Hizo of all time. But I thought, okay, well, you know, anything can happen in a fight. Maybe this is a fight to put some money on, but I didn't, thankfully, because Fedor did knock him out in 1 minute, and then afterwards announced that he was, in fact, going to retire. And the end of the career of the great Fedor Emelianenko is apparently upon us. Never got his fight in the UFC, dominated Pride, came to the U.S. and Strikeforce and suffered a series of losses. And, Mike, what is the legacy of Fedor?
We, you know, it's just going to depend on...
Besides killing four companies, I believe.
It's just really going to depend on what era of MMA you came up with. Because this is proof how quiet this retirement is. And granted, nobody ever believes a retirement when it comes to a canvas-matted sport. I still believe Terry Funk was going to come out of retirement on the show you did with him on Friday. But it's... If you saw him in Pride, and yes, there were the free show matchups with Zulu and things like that, but Fedor was legit. If you saw him get dropped on his head by Kevin Randleman, if you saw him out there facing the guys he did and in the manner he beat them, Josh Barnett, I mean, these to discredit his legacy because he fought in Pride is ridiculous, especially when it comes from so many fans who hold Quentin Jackson or Wanderlei Silva in such high regard. Anderson Silva, for that matter, who nobody ever remembers. His last loss was getting knee-barred in a freakish fashion by Rio Chonin on Shockwave eons ago. To dismiss what Fedor did in Japan is ridiculous, and how the end of his career went. It just doesn't make any sense. You can take out a lot of frustrations on M1 Global, on the people around him, on his brother, on lots of different things. But to discredit his legacy, if you had a chance to see it, I think is wrong. But it's just really hard to convince anyone who came up in that you know, Ultimate Fighter era and post that, where there was so much vitriol from Dana White, where there was so much controversy over, you know, what did the Japanese fighters, you know, mean when they came over? And lots of them came over who were stars over there and lost. And Fedor was one of those people, which ends up putting him in a position where, you know, people start to discredit him too. But it's just, as somebody who had a chance to watch pretty much his whole career starting in rings, and he fought Nogueira and Heath Herring, it doesn't really make any sense to me whatsoever.
Now, here's an odd question for you. UFC is about to induct Tito Ortiz into the Hall of Fame. And I guess it is a UFC Hall of Fame and not a Mixed Martial Arts Hall of Fame. But if you were Dana White, what would you do with the Hall of Fame? In the sense that a guy like Fedor Emelianenko, I think most people would agree that he was the greatest heavyweight fighter of all time. Some would disagree, but many would agree. Would you consider down the road, if you were Dana White, putting Fedor in your Hall of Fame?
If I'm Dana White, no. And it would be a hard thing to try to switch from. I know business is business in the whole nine yards, but it would be tough. Again, unless he broke away from Vadim and maybe ripped him, you know, repeatedly over and over again or something like that, you know, and to make Dana happy, then I could see it happening. But realistically, if Dana's involved, I don't see why he wouldn't. Really, it makes sense. I don't see why the UFC would, unless they're going to do a legitimate MMA Hall of Fame, which, you know, I could sit here and actually explain to you why I would believe Inoki and Takada deserve spots, not as fighters in MMA Hall of Fame, but would deserve a position in one. So, I mean, when it comes to Fedor, if you wanted to make it legit, then yes, you honor him that way. But if it's just going to be a WWE-style Hall of Fame or a UFC Lifetime Achievement Hall of Fame, which it's okay if it is, you know, because you can have your Ace Franklins and, you know, your Forrest Griffins and guys like that who were, you know, incredibly beneficial to the strength of the company, which Fedor was not, I mean, that's okay too. But as far as what the actual real legacy is, whether anybody wants to say it or not, I mean, Fedor, no matter what you saw in Strikeforce, no matter some of the freak show matches you may have seen before, Fedor was legitimately the greatest heavyweight of all time. You know, again, followed closely by the Nogueiras and guys like that, but there's a reason Fedor deserves the respect that he does.
What are your thoughts on Brock Lesnar going into the UFC Hall of Fame?
Again, it's depending on what you use it for. Even though his career was short, MMA... And people would argue against it and things like that. Well, it was just so flash in the pan or something like that. I mean, look, this is how MMA was started in Japan with weird things like this. And Brock Lesnar fits perfectly into that. Talk about the right guy at the right time. And again, he wouldn't be my first choice. I would wait a long time, but I think before he went in, because there would be other guys more deserving from the UFC. But you know what? You can make a case for it, and it's hard to argue against it because of the business that he did and the help that he provided.
I think Brock Lesnar goes in without even any question whatsoever. I know that there are people that argue that, but there are also Randy Couture's that think, of course he should go into the Hall of Fame. Brock Lesnar won the UFC Heavyweight Championship, and he was, without question, and the second closest is George St. Pierre, who is assuredly going to the UFC Hall of Fame. But Brock Lesnar was the absolute number one biggest pay-per-view draw they've ever had. So I don't know how you have a UFC Hall of Fame and you don't eventually put Brock Lesnar in. But I know there are people listening to this right now that are appalled at the thought of this. And, well, it's another discussion for another day. We're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Wrapping up the show here for this week. Tomorrow is Raw. I don't even know what's on Raw tomorrow, Mike. What is scheduled? Do we have anything scheduled for Raw?
I have no idea. I should check my cable guide here real quick, but I don't really know of anything.
The only thing I know is that Vicky Guerrero is the GM for Raw and SmackDown this week, and I guess we're going to get more build for the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. I guess we'll see what happens. We've only got a few weeks left before they permanently move to 3 hours.
Well, we've got the return of Chris Jericho.
Oh, that's right. Chris Jericho returns. That is correct. Chris Jericho returns tomorrow.
I hope it's a baby face after that thing.
Well, you know, Chris Jericho had said in the past that he wanted to retire a heel. He never, ever wanted to come back as a babyface again. However, on his Twitter, somebody asked him if he wanted to come back as a babyface or a heel, and his response was, whatever you want me to. So I think he is very open to coming back as a babyface, and I think there's a chance that he will do so tomorrow. So I guess we'll see, but he is back tomorrow. I should note that for all the talk of Randy Orton not coming back after a suspension, they are already billing him for shows the moment his suspension ends, which is no surprise. And he shall be back, of course, when that time comes. And that is really all of the updates. It should be the return of Rey Mysterio here pretty soon as well from an injury and a suspension, in fact. And we never even got a chance to talk about the new Mystico down in Mexico. Dragon Lee has been dubbed the new Mystico, and those that follow CMLL, for the most part, are appalled. So we can talk more about that next week, or you can jump into the archives and listen to the Steve Sims show, Dr. Lucha, from this past Thursday when we discussed this situation in great detail. So later on tonight at WrestlingObserver.com, myself and Dave Meltzer up with a brand new radio show. Only four subscribers will be running down the ROHI pay-per-view, talking all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. That's coming up later on tonight only at WrestlingObserver.com. So head up there and sign up, and we shall talk to you on that program. We are done. I want to thank Mike. I want to thank all the folks at Sports Byline, all of our affiliates, everybody listening. We'll talk to you again next week. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.